Duke de Sessa comes around the corner. 300 metres to go. Three lengths in front of Land Legend, who couldn't sprint with it. Deny Knowledge, Wax on Zardozzi, and here's Buckaroo. Duke de Sessa, 200 metres to go. 4 lengths in front. Buckaroo's the only danger. Trying to get into the lead. Duke de Sessa, 100 to go from Buckaroo. A length and three quarters, but it's going to be Duke de Sessa, Harry Coffey. This is your moment. A length and a half, Buckaroo.
Sunshine in Paris coming wide from I Wish I Win. Jolly Star's got it all to do. Storm Boy at the 300 leads the way from Bella Nipotina, then Growing Empire. Giga Kick making ground on the inside, then Lady of Camelot. Bella Nipotina moved up. Bella Nipotina with Growing Empire. Up the inside is Giga Kick. Giga Kick going to Bella Nipotina. Bella's in front though. Bella Nipotina wins the Everest from Giga Kick. I think Growing Empire third. Touching me.
Hello everyone and welcome to a racing preview special. Usual host Ben Coluzzi hard at work with the Moonee Valley Racing Club getting ready for one of the big mornings of the spring with Breakfast with the Best. So Trav Noonan in the host chair joining Will Alford the bot to run you through a massive weekend of racing with the Caulfield Cup and the Everest and a racing show, racing previews collab. Great to be with you, Will.
Yeah. My normal co-hosts are just slack. I think that's the case. I think Benny's going to be sleeping at Moonee Valley tonight, so he's got lots to do, so fair enough. Last year I did the Caulfield Cup review on my own. It was one of the worst things, the most embarrassing things I've ever done in my life. So we had to get Trav to come this time to steer the ship, I reckon.
Oh, it's good for the punters that it's all worked out, and that means they can get the best of your analysis. How'd you see the Caulfield track on Saturday? Let's get straight into the real stuff. The pair of us, I don't think we're really jokesters like a few of the others, so let's just keep it pretty line of length. Caulfield on Saturday, how do you think the track played?
Well, I thought it was probably just as hard, or probably even more hard, to make ground on Saturday than what it was on Guineas Day. It was just that it was inside on Guineas Day, and there were more lanes in play, I guess. So that sort of, I think the inside was off. So if you were drawn in, it was a disadvantage, unless you could get off the fence. But I thought the track played quite on pace, and you had to be in the sort of, at least in the first half of the field, to make any sort of impact on the race. And obviously there were outliers in that, but quite on pace. And it was a soft six to a seven throughout the day. It was a slightly quicker in the shoot. I thought it was a good day of racing. Slightly disappointed by some of the figures that have come out of the day. The Caulfield Cup was at least the first two in the Caulfield Cup were good, but you know, some of the lead ups for the major, at least the 3 year old ones, a little bit disappointing. So we'll talk about that in a sec.
Yeah, what did you make of the wind on Saturday? That obviously played a little bit of an impact. I don't know where you were sort of watching Saturday from, but I thought a few riders were psyched out by the wind a little bit early in the day, some real slow speeds.
Yeah, that can happen. I think with wind, like, it definitely can be a thing. Just with, you know, especially at Caulfield, when the southerly gets involved out of the chute, it can make a massive difference. But I think more importantly, especially in the circle races, they can get into their heads and they go slower than what they actually should. So I didn't think it made a massive difference. I thought it was just, I think it's just a, you know, having three race days in a week, it's very difficult to prepare perfect tracks every week. And I wouldn't want to have a track manager's job on a week like this.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think they ask a lot of these tracks during the carnival period. Personal opinion is that Wednesday meeting could be moved somewhere else, perhaps to Sandown, Mornington, an MRC track, to give Caulfield that extra day that it doesn't need to be racing on. But maybe,
but especially with the 1,000 guineas gone now, like there's the Coonjee there, which is good, but not, I don't remember the last time a horse backed up from the Coonjee into the Caulfield Cup. Maybe I think probably Dewis was the last horse to do it, but Yeah, I don't know if it's really serving its purpose anyway. But
yeah, no, I think you hit the money there. Going to start with the Group 1, the Sportsbet Caulfield Cup. This is a race run at a very strong tempo. Deny Knowledge went out hard. We expected that, Will, but from the figures, did we expect Duke DeSessa to be right up alongside her?
Yes and no. Like he has been forward this preparation. They've ridden him a lot more positively than what they have in the past. I thought the market was really interesting with this race. They were bang on in here. Like you look at the firmers in this race, and it's just, you know, the horses that were firm were the first four and that finished. So I thought that was really interesting. That Duke DeSessa was well backed. Buckaroo. I thought Buckaroo was an enormous go. There was $5. I took about what, like 5 minutes before the race, and then it stumped about 370 Betfair. So it's been a massive go. And I think, you know, people given Joe a bit of stick for the ride, but, you know, I think it was a little bit of victim of circumstance. Maybe he could have been a little bit more positive early. He just got shuffled back a little. So, yeah, good call for, I mean, not a good Caulfield Cup, but it's, I think we sort of expected it pre-race. Like it was quite thin, and there's been massive margins throughout the field. I thought it was quite testing. And interestingly, Duke DeSessa is not nominated for the cup, so he'll go to a different cup, maybe even Hong Kong, I think they were saying. And Buckaroo obviously will go to the Melbourne Cup. I thought Land Legend, he was keen, and obviously Zach Purton couldn't hold him, so he had to make a bid race move. But yeah, just looking forward to a Melbourne Cup. I think Buckaroo is the only horse that's sort of relevant. Maybe you can give that slight. You can be slightly forgiving to Land Legend just because he was so keen. But yeah, looking forward to the Melbourne Cup, which is, you know, the Caulfield Cup is a one of the main lead ups for a race like the Melbourne Cup. I wouldn't want to be with anything other than Buckaroo. I think it's going to be either Buckaroo or an international winning this year.
Yeah, it does look perhaps that way from a market perspective. Just on Buckaroo's run, how strong was he in terms of figures, you know, giving us some context around maybe that last 1,000 metres?
Oh, he had to sustain a long run just to get into the race. He was so far off the lead. And, you know, we saw all day that the on paces were leading and winning. So I thought he did a massive job, and just the way, you know, in the context of the day and the race, like he was the only horse that broke, aside from Duke DeSessa, that broke benchmark from the 400 and the two. Like, yeah, it's just a massive effort, I thought, what he was able to do. And it was a sustained run too, and he was held up between the six and the four. You can see that in the sectionals. Just a victim of circumstances, a big field, there's horses in his way falling back into him because it was a testing run. A testingly run race. And yeah, I'm looking forward to the Melbourne Cup for him, but I think Jan Brugel is still firmly at the top of, you know, he'll be sitting in his box in Bendigo or wherever they are. And he wouldn't be worried by, yeah, wherever he wouldn't be worried by anything he's seen here, I wouldn't have thought.
No, I don't think so. If he comes out in the form he's been in the UK, then I suppose that's obviously a little bit of the gamble with travelling horses halfway across the world. Buckaroo, I just don't think he can be going any better. You look at it from a ratings perspective, he's improved, albeit slightly, from what he did in the Underwood, and again, slightly on what he did on the Turnbull. So he's just tracking the right way for the Melbourne Cup. My personal thoughts on him getting 3,200 metres, there's nothing to suggest from Saturday that he can't run 3,200. It's always hard trying to predict these horses where they can stretch out, but he's certainly ticked the 2,400-metre box there on Saturday. He's as strong as anything. Mm. Duke DeSessa, I thought it was an incredibly good Harry Coffey ride. He walked that track. Just to give people a bit of insight who weren't at Caulfield and probably weren't able to pick up some things, Harry walked that track, I reckon, 3 or 4 times throughout the day. Just trying to nail the position he wanted to be on Duke DeSessa. And he kept walking that inside fence in the straight just to see if, you know, you could still be at your top in that section. And I thought it was just executed to perfection when he put the foot down on Froggy at the 800 meter mark, made a lot of them chase from a long way out on a fit in-form horse. And I think with Duke de Cessa, it's probably worth noticing or noting as well that he didn't have the best of preps going into the Cups last year. So he was pretty rushed getting to the Caulfield Cup. They went 1,400 in a Memsie, missed a few races, went to 2,000 in a brutal Turnbull, and then turned up 2 weeks later in the Caulfield Cup. And it probably just all happened a bit fast for him. Whereas this preparation, he's had a really good grounding from the Mar Stable, those 2,000-meter runs in open handicaps in August, then the Underwood, the Turnbull, dropping right down in the weights. And the market got it exactly right. You're right. I was a bit surprised to see he started $11. When you're working on the day, sometimes hard to follow the betting flux, but they got it exactly right with him, suggesting he was one of the key chances and he's run a career peak figure. Do you think this is real in terms of the winner? Can he hold this number going forward? Or is it just everything went right for him on the day?
I wouldn't back him to do it next start. I'd come off it a little bit, but I wouldn't say that's not real. I think what he did, you know, the horses up Winnearing, he travelled, he trucked into the race and other horses were falling back behind him. So whether it's a one-off, I'm not sure. I think the rating's definitely real, but I'm not going to give him 103 next time when he rocks up to Moonee Valley or wherever he goes next, really. It might even be the Queen Elizabeth on Stakes Day. So that's exciting. We get to see him there. I would have loved to see him in the Cup, but it'll be very interesting betting-wise to see what the market does with him against sort of lesser horses or even a horse like Gavin Bedgegood's Kingswood. That'd be an interesting matchup. Mm. But, I don't know. I'm not going to give him that, but I'm not suggesting that rating's not real at all. So it'd be definitely interesting to see what the market does with him next time.
I think it's interesting where they actually go because you talk on that race like the Queen Elizabeth, he's going to get hit hard. Mm. I would have thought from a handicap rating perspective, he's 109 going into Saturday. Caulfield Cup winner. They're going to have to pull him up a fair bit. I'd say it'd be nearly 115 after his performance there Saturday, which is going to weight him out of a lot of those group three handicaps. You'll be carrying 62 or more. So I think that they've really got to just run him at weight for age until he can get to like something like a Sydney Cup in the autumn, if that's the way they want to go. So,
well,
Zipping Classic's weight for age, so they could keep him going for that and run maybe in a Champion Stakes. Otherwise, like you said, maybe they take him to Hong Kong. He's going to be a hard horse to place from now as a Caulfield Cup winner, but he's done his job, really, hasn't he? So
yeah, well, probably a decent comparison for him would probably be Van de Clare, really. Hard horse to place, but he'll be completely honest in every race he runs in. You know, like he'll be the rock for the next sort of 2 to 3 years. And, you know, he's going to run his rating and whether that's good enough to win or not, I'm not sure. But, you know, he's obviously a very nice horse. And just, you know, Kieran Maher, to get him to this level, like we knew he was a good horse, but to take that next step and, you know, he was favoured by the way that the track played and the scenario that was, you know, the way the race was run. It's a massive peak and in the same sort of half hour he had Balan Nipotina win the Everest. He's an incredible trainer and he's doing lots of good things. So
I think it just proves again he's a master at getting it right grand final day. This would be no doubt what he's planned for a while is this horse's grand final. And he got the horse to run a new career peak. So, incredible training stuff from Kieran Maher. Want to get your thoughts on a few horses that finished back in the field here just for going forward and try and keep them tidy for time-wise. Deny Knowledge, what did you make of her performance?
She was good. She sort of worked up into the race. She was sort of slow away and she just, you know, she was gone and she kept kicking up. Good run. They probably... I don't know. Where do they go from here? I'm not exactly sure. Maybe even they drop her back to the Matriarch. I'm pretty sure she won that race last year. So, you know, that race is made for her. She's, I don't know. I'm sure he weighted out of that. I don't know what the weight scale for that is. But, and she's a Group 1 winner, but I thought she was really good. She was one of those ones I was sort of half thinking about backing her just because, you know, she got up to $25 Betfair, and, you know, based on the last start rating and the weight, like, she was the highest rated horse, weight adjusted. You know, she was getting out to a price that was really backable, but you just know that that's not how it works. But even still, I was half thinking about it. But yeah, she ran really well, so she's a really good mare.
And just on the other two horses that were well in contention in the betting, Zardozi, did she run a strong 2400 there on Saturday after such a bold test? My sort of feeling is she might not have. She got a really sweet ride by Andrea Atzini behind the pace. What do you make of her?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think you can say she doesn't get it, because she was really strong in an Oaks. And yes, it's not the same. You know, it's a Caulfield Cup's very different to an Oaks, and obviously the Sydney Oaks where she ran second, that was farcically run. But I just sort of think that, you know, she finished in comparison to the rest of the field, like, she hasn't finished awfully. I think she probably gets mile and a half well, just maybe not at this level. I'm not sure. She was, you know, she was firm, and I think she's a really good filly. There's just not that mile and a half round races for mares. Like, you know, we don't really have them in Australia. We don't have 2,000 meter mares races or anything. They're all sort of below 1,600 meters, which doesn't make much sense really. Like, where does she go? Like, a group two race for mares would be perfect for her, but I guess they probably have to drop her back in distance down to a champions stakes, or they just take her for a spell, I guess. I'm not sure. But she was good.
Ilias?
Yeah, he was disappointing. I sort of was questioning whether he would get a mile and a half before the race, and I don't quite think he did. So, yeah, I don't know. He reminds me a lot of Just Fine, and maybe that's a little bit unfair to him. He's probably a better version of Just Fine, but I don't think there's, you know, the same stable. It's an easy comparison to make. But I just sort of thought, you know, he didn't get his Group 1. He didn't win a Group 1. But
he hasn't won one yet.
Yeah, I think they should have just gone to the Metrop, and would have been very, very hard to beat there in the Metrop, but. Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what they do. They've said publicly they're going to push on to the Melbourne Cup. I'm surprised at that.
Yeah. I mean, it's Gay Waterhouse, so you can't really say she's not going to run it, but I'd be surprised if he's a factor in the Melbourne Cup.
And then just on Circle of Fire, of course, he was one of the horses who was Melbourne Cup, well, high up in betting before the start of this prep. He didn't really find the line that well. Are we now just putting the pen through him for future races preparation? Has he just not come up?
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's, other than Buckaroo, I just don't think he can really follow anything out of this race. You know, even, I'm not interested in this race other than Buckaroo going anywhere. I think it was a destination race and the only horse that's actually going anywhere. And I still, like, the Melbourne Cup's an extra 800 metres, so it's not, he's not guaranteed to run the trip, but he got through the line as if he might. So, yeah, it's a race that you can just, you know, that's it, and then you can take one horse out of it, I think.
Yep. Yeah, I'm probably one and a half. I just want to see what happens with Land Legend.
Yeah, me too. One and a half,
But he didn't start. He was very, very keen there at Caulfield, and he was quite agitated pre-race going to the barriers. I will say Caulfield 2400 meter start, they're right on top of you, the crowd. So it's similar to that 2400 meter start is very similar to probably, you know, a Cox Plate start, and the fact that the fans are just right there. And I reckon that got to him a bit. You know, he probably hasn't experienced something like that Land Legend. And yeah, maybe getting the Flemington Melbourne Cup day where the actual starting position is for the Melbourne Cup, he might calm down in that 2-3 minutes, 4 minutes before the race. You got no one up at the 1200 meter start. So yeah, it's maybe something just in the back of my mind about Land Legend, because he paraded okay by all reports, but then just got very agitated on the way to the gates, was what Zach Purton said. But
sorry, you go.
Oh, I was just going to say, we've probably done the Caulfield Cup its justice. Yeah. We've gone through the field, so probably not too much else left to say. Yeah, we'll move on if you're happy to do so.
Yep.
Yep, good. Let's get to a few of the other races throughout the day. We'll go in race book order. You want to touch on a few of these three-year-old races. They're certainly interesting going forward. So the Gothic Stakes race number two, lots of talk around the ride on Gallant Sun. I'll get your take on that. This is a race run at quite a slow speed through the first section of the race. Lofty Arch has got across and they didn't go hard by any stretch of the imagination. And he was too good. What'd you make of the performance?
Yeah, I mean, on the ride with Gallant Sun, it was heavily supported throughout the week. It was about 11% firm. It was from opening price. It was about $4.30 to about $3 Betfair SP. He's heavily supported. I thought it was interesting. You know, he jumped cleanly and you would have thought he'd be able to be leading essentially, but he decided to hand up and there was no real intent to get going in a 1,200 meter race. I don't know. I think all the same, I don't think the horse was ever going to win. I don't, you know, but he never made really, he didn't make much of an impression at all. I thought, you know, the logical progression for these horses now is the Coolmore, and I don't think they're quite good enough if the, you know, Traffic Warden's going to turn up off obviously being a late scratching in the Everest. No, I wouldn't have any worry off the setup for him. He's trained by James Cummings. He's a, you know, he's the probably top two or three conditioner of horses in the country. Lofty Arch, I thought, you know, obviously I backed it last time at 50s and 40s, but here we are. It's one here around a turn. And I ended up having something small and lovely cut at the absolute death at sort of 40s. She's gone enormous. She's actually a half to, what's the horse's name? King of Hastings is the horse. She's a full sister to him. And, you know, Reese Goodwin's got a really nice horse on his hands. I think, you know, the 1,000 Guineas, Lady Shenandoah is in the paddock. Obviously, the other Waller horse, its name escapes me at the moment, the Autumn Sun filly. Autumn Glow is off the scene. Other than that, there's no real standout from a 1,000 Guineas perspective. And you know, she showed a whole lot of talent as a, you know, early three-year-old and did some nice things and ran some nice splits. And, you know, she's returned with a massive run. Like, she's running all over them late. And I thought, you know, she put her hand up to be the, you know, at least, I'm not exactly sure what's going on. And I had a look in Sydney and the three-year-old fillies up there that, you know, would be going to the 1,000 Guineas. They didn't go too well. That race didn't go any good. So, I mean, logically, she's a favourite. Obviously, she's trained by Reese Goodwin. He's not a Chris Waller or a Kieran Marr, but he can train. So she's an interesting horse going forward. Other than that, I wouldn't really, like, these horses go to the Coolmore and they're not going to be competitive in that, I wouldn't have thought.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Reserve Bank probably goes to the paddock.
Mm-hmm.
After Saturday, he was a bit disappointing. Come off what he did in the Dane Hill behind first settler by a few lengths. With you on Gallant Sun, I'm a bit surprised the market pushed him so hard. I like him as a horse, but his debut number wasn't like huge. He went 87.9 at the weights, and then he's only gone 86.1 there on Saturday. So, you know, bring that into context, he's winning sort of a length of what he did on his debut, length and a half, and he just might not have improved at this stage. So you see that with a lot of young horses. They're chasing that debut number, and the market can sometimes expect them to get better. Albeit, I think the key to him probably is going to be riding him a bit more aggressive. They took a sit there on Saturday. I think they got that wrong, but he was still a little bit plain over the concluding stages. Race number three, this race was run an absolute walk. They could have had hurdles out in front there, Will, and I think a horse like Stern Idol would have led them by maybe 20 lengths.
God, honestly, this is embarrassing, West, to be honest.
Yeah, very, very slow tempo. This is where, I don't know, the riders must have bought heavily into the wind or they thought, you know, they're better off going this slow. Mickey D sat wide. Probably gave King of Wall Street under the race shape his best chance, and he just got the bobbin.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's barely even a race. Like it was a, it's about a 600 meter sprint almost. So, they went slower than what they did last year, which I didn't think was possible when Riff Rocket got rolled by Sunsets.
Yeah,
that was, and they went stupidly slow there as well. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to make of this as a derby lead up, because I sort of want to say this is no good, but off the top of my head, I cannot think of what else there is, because obviously you got Henline and the Falcon or something Falcon that should have won.
Falcon.
Those two, they're going to the spring champion, I'd say, but just where that's placed now, because they've moved that just to mess with the derby, I think. And what are the chances they back up? I'm not exactly sure. You also got Broadsiding. He's probably more than likely, he's not going to back up, let's be honest. So what are you left with? I don't know. What are we left with for the derby?
Yeah, we're going to be left with this, whatever turns up in the Geelong Classic and the Vars horses. So
exactly right.
That's what's going to make up the derby.
And, you know, I'd love to come and tell you, like, this race has gone no good, which it has gone no good. It's awful. But they're all just going to race each other. And I wouldn't want to be with this form line. I thought Keeneland, you know, I'd probably trust the SP with him. It's a hard race to take anything out of, just because I've gone so slow. So I don't want to say that, you know, he can't win the derby. This race has gone awful, but just mainly because it's not even a race. So it's just not a form line, and it's not one I want to follow, at least.
Yeah, it's going to be hard assessing these horses in the derby. King of Wall Street, you'd think, will like 2,500 looking at him. But, yeah, I don't know how you sort of assess these horses going towards the derby. I guess maybe the market's going to be the best guide. Hugh Bowman will take over on Keeneland in the derby anyway, so that's probably a positive. The Ethereal, 2,000 metres for the girls. They ran nearly 2 seconds quicker overall. So the boys were 209.89 official time. These girls were 207.84, and yet they still walked through the first 800 metres.
Yeah, and this is an awful overall time as well. Not awful, but, like, it's no good. I think at least with the fillies, they've got that that John Sargent filly up in Sydney that won a, I think it was a maiden or a 64 in really good
power
time.
Power of Opal,
that's it, yeah. Yeah, looking at this probably isn't the form line I want to take. I thought Two Down the Street was good. Just, you know, she trucked into the race. She looked like she was going to explode. And, you know, maybe, I don't want to say she didn't stay, because she won. She ran well enough through the line. But maybe mile and a half, probably not exactly ideal. I backed Feminile. She sort of came back towards the inside, and she was only second up here. So maybe she's the improver. I thought the Mufa Hurry Curry, I was sort of half thinking about backing her early in the week, and she was heavily, heavily supported. She was the one they wanted. Yeah, no good. They got too far back on her. And yeah, I mean, it's the same thing with the derby. This race hasn't gone particularly well, but what else is there? Like, you've got the John Sargent filly, who has to be clearly favourite, because she's coming through the good. She came through the flight, and then she's gone to a 64 or whatever it was, and absolutely bolted in fast time. So I think she's the clear on top horse, and she's sort of bred to stay the mile and a half as well. She's by Ocean Park, so she's the one, I think.
Yeah, well, she'll be there wakeful day against these fillies, get a good line.
Okay, well, yep. How much can you have on?
Yeah, it'll be interesting. The market's already got her favourite for the Oaks, and J-Mac wrote her at Hawkesbury. I'd say you'll be aligning yourself.
Yeah, well, how often does J-Mac go to Hawkesbury? I don't bet in Sydney, but I'd say it wouldn't be that often.
No, I don't think it's that often at all. So, yeah. No, it's a good line, and she started $1.20 there on Thursday, and she won by 5.5.
Yeah, eased down fast.
I don't think the official revised figures have come out, but the
sectionals are good.
Yeah, the initial numbers look all right. So, yeah, she's got to go to their favourite. I still think Jenny's Meadow, personally, there's something in her once she gets up over that 2,500, and she's got the win at Flemington. I didn't think this race has gone super terrible. Like,
yeah, it's not terrible. Yeah, it's not terrible. Yeah. The time's no good, but it's not a terrible rating. I thought, yeah, you're right with Jenny's Meadow. She sort of, the first two runs there was just, I don't know. Like, she put up those two really nice ratings at Flemington when she won the Taj Rossi as a late season two-year-old. And I think she's just sort of run the rust off and she's getting out to that mile, 2,000-meter trip. So, yeah, 100%, mile and a half could be her go.
Yeah, and I think you're going to have Inevitable Truth getting up to the mile and a half. She is shorter than Jenny's Meadow at the moment in the all-in market, which surprises me. But, they'll play some factor. I think Too Darn Discreet. You talked about the 1,000 guineas having no definitive number one seed. Wouldn't be surprised at all if Dan O'Sullivan freshens her back up for the mile so, and doesn't go down the Oaks path. Yeah, she's pretty deep in the prep. Good problem to have, though. She'd be competitive in either race, you'd think. The Alinghi, race number 5, you want to touch on this race. Is a very strong run race early. This is probably where the wind died down. Then you saw some strong speeds in races 5 and 6. This was led at a good gallop by Ben Malam on Penthouse, and he set up a fair few of these races. He led, of course, on Estriella. And Neonce, Jordan Childs, just able to sit outside. He's been riding really well of late, Geordie, and gets another stakes winner. And G Beg, he's having a good little run at the moment, Will. I was just having a look at his start to this season, and he's had 40 starters this season, 9 winners, 22.5% strike rate, return on investment of 11%, beating the market expectation. He's a trainer you've got to look out for. And the market got this bang on. 4.20 into 3.20, started favourite, and she ran right up to expectation.
Yeah, I mean, when is Graham Begg not airborne? He's such a good trainer. I got this race completely wrong. Neonce went out on a peak, and she ran first up. And, like, this has gone massive. This is a really, really, really good rating. Pandalawi, I'm excited about as well. She's lightly raced. Her first ever run was massive, and then she sort of came off, and then she turned up to Flemington that day, and she opened like 30s or something. They backed her into about $10, and she knocked off Here Comes the Star and Lynx. She's quite an inconsistent horse, but you know the market really liked her here, so I thought that was interesting. I didn't have her as much of a. I didn't think she was. Much of a chance on Saturday, but she proved me wrong. Neonce as well, and there's obviously massive gaps back to third and fourth. Obviously, Ismith copped the bump, but that didn't matter at all. I found it really interesting. I don't know whether it was the just relentless money for Neonce, or was a I also think it was the market not liking Ismith, which I thought was interesting because the market loves this horse and it has. Pretty much its entire career. So,
were they worried about the soft track?
I think that's probably what it was, and also the inside barrier. Maybe they caught on to like the first two lanes being not ideal. But I thought Jai McNeil did a good enough job to get off the fence. So maybe a soft track was the thing there. Sorry, I was surprised how heavily it drifted. You know, it was the fit horse off a good rating, and I thought you know, be on speed, and just got that completely wrong, but out of this race, just follow the first two horses, that they'll win wherever they go, unless they race each other, which they probably will. But
I think Pondalau is going to the Begonia Bell, the sprint race for the mares on Derby Day, and Neonce is off to the How now on. 1,000 guineas day. So both horses.
That's a while away, isn't it?
Yeah, 4 weeks. So just keep her on the fresh side.
Fair enough. Okay. Well, at least they're not racing each other, so you can get a bet out of it.
Yeah, exactly right. Race 6, 1,000 guineas prelude. Tim Clark went fast here in front on Too Darn Lizzie, and nothing really made much ground. So you had first, third, fourth in the run, finishing first, second, third. I didn't think she was going to be able to run a strong 1,400 Too Darn Lizzie, but Too Smart, Gay Waterhouse and Adrian Bott giving her the second run at it. And she was just too good under the circumstances. Market was relatively keen on her. They pushed her from $10 earlier, or sort of 10 minutes before the jump, into $7.50. Zaytung ends up finishing second. GG's Myth Truth, the Tasmanian filly, finishes in third. I heard Nick on our podcast say that she may have just had a couple of things in the mounting yard go against her, and she'll improve off that run, he thought. So maybe something he can kick up for her. But this race just dominated by those on speed in the end.
Yeah, she just ran them into the ground, really. Like, she used the way the track was playing perfectly. And, you know, like, looking at the race, all the you know, Zaytung, GG's Mistruth, like, the main sort of chance, they were all sort of drawn wide, and they had that sort of query over them whether they'd go back, which sort of put me off betting into this race. And Too Good, Gaywood House agent, but they sent it straight to the front. And, you know, you get these horses all the time. Like, they sort of fade at 12 or fade at 14, and then they go 14 again, and they just rock solid. They get it bang on. And it's, you know, you normally, you know, as a punter, you're looking at the form, you want to, well, I mean, not always, but the horse that's running on in nice sectionals is the horse you want to be going for up in trip. But with Gaywater House, like, they could just be falling in a hole. And then next time they turn up, and they'll be rock solid and just run straight through the line. So they're such good trainers, and Tim Clark gave it a perfect ride. What do you reckon about 16? Do you reckon she gets 16? Like, it's hard to say no based on this, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say she wouldn't on the basis of this performance, but I'm sort of treating this meeting with a bit of caution. There was a lot of horses that weren't able to make ground. She was pretty advantaged. My personal thought would be to be against her at the mile in the 1,000 guineas and try to find something else. But as you touched on, there's not that much coming through. So maybe a filly like Lovely Cut who ran in the Gothic, perhaps something down from Sydney. So
yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. That's what I was going to say. Like, Lovely Cut, just, you know, just much, much more likable than this form, I thought. Just, you know, with the sectional she ran, she's already sort of at this level of form, you know. You know, she's run a weight for age rating of 95 here. Lovely Cut was about 93.7, I'm pretty sure. So, and with the sectional she ran and being unfavored by the track, I thought that, you know, she's the one for the... I think she's got this form covered, even though this race went better than what she did, or at least the winner did anyway. Yeah.
I thought there was one horse here that was definitely unsuited by the way the race was run and the day, and that's Matisse. She's come home pretty strong in the last 400.
Yeah, she's the other one, yeah. But she's still beaten 3 lengths. But, yeah, she is the one. Like, she pops out, you know, you look at the sectional, she's really the only one that's beating sort of the last 400 metres, the class benchmark. So, and she did it quite comfortably too. So she definitely is the filly that can take a massive improvement. And she has always sort of indicated that, like, you know, she was a fast finishing one of those 1,000 guineas preludes. And I backed her in the Blue Diamond actually at Big Odds. So, she does give that sort of vibe. And I heard someone, I think it was Amy Yagi out of the yard. I was doing the stuff for .com on the Saturday wrap, and she said, you know, she'll improve as a type anyway out to 16. I'm not sure. I don't know if Nick said anything about her as a type, but that's what she thinks anyway. At a mile, she'll be suited.
Yeah, I can't recall him saying anything specifically, but yeah, she does look like she'd be ready for 1600. And Anthony and Sam Freeman, as we sort of touched on with Kieran Maher, good grand final trainers. So if that's where they think she's going to peak, you'd expect she'd maybe improve off what she did there, but a lot of those fillies will go to the Vanity on Cup Day, so that'll be an interesting race. The Millennium Sprint Group 2 race, 1,000 metres, Estriella leads, wins, market against her heavily here, $3.70 on Wednesday, gets out to $6 plus Betfair starting price. Before we touch on Ray Magnerio, you got a good handle on these Saturday markets. Why do you think the market binned her so much here?
I don't know. And I was very annoyed at myself that I didn't end up backing her, because there was no obvious reason. I mean, when they drift that heavily, like, it sort of is stinky, but, like, she's jumped $6. That just had to be too much of an overreaction. I mean, I guess it was probably because she's her first two runs this preparation were no good. I'd say that was a fair indication why. But, you know, she started favourite in Amoya, and now she rocked up here at $6 in the Millennium Sprint trying to race Ray McNeary. I don't know. I was quite annoyed I didn't end up betting in this race, but Ray McNeary was heavily supported. Yeah. To answer your question, I've got no idea. I think she's a horse that, you know, she's probably that slightly overrated. Like she's not favorite from Moya. You know, she's not a favorite in a Group One race. She's sort of 20s, I'd say. Like she's that sort of really, really good mare at 1,000 to 1,200 meters. Maybe even not even 1,200 meters. Like she's fast. Like she good mare, but she's not Group One. I wouldn't have thought. But yeah, what do you think? Why do you think that happened? I don't know.
I think the last start rating, to be honest, I think they, you know, there's been this expectation that she's going to be this horse that blows the barn doors off a big race. And then she failed first up in the Moya and didn't hit what the market expected. Obviously started 3:10 on that day. While she ran well, she was well off what the market expected. Then she's gone around 7:50 in the Manicato, beaten 3.3, way down on her sort of best form. So I think they were just worried about how she's going. I think this is the answer. I think sometimes there's a little edge in that against the big teams. I don't know if they, once they've had a bad rating and you can maybe find a reason for that. So the reasoning probably I would have found for Australia's bad performance is 1,200 meters. She doesn't settle well enough at the moment for 1,200. She's come back to the 1,000 and they're putting a lot of weight on that 1,200 meter rating. So from a betting perspective, that's probably a positive for us, is that we could be getting an inflated price against a rating or figure that probably doesn't mean a lot of context around a 1,000 meter race.
Yeah, that's why I was so annoyed that I didn't back her, just because like I thought it was very obviously an overreaction. It's that's easy to say now because she won, but. Yep. You know, she just couldn't have gone around $6 when she started 280 Betfair and Amoya first up. You know, she was $4 in a 280 Betfair and Amoya first up, and she's $6 in a Millennium Sprint. So, yeah, interesting one. I thought McNeary definitely should have won, though. Like, that was an interesting ride. John McNeil was a good jockey, but this wasn't one of his best. I think 1,000 metres is still a little bit quick for him as well. Like, he's sort of chasing the whole way. There'll be a race for him Cup week. You know, he's won down the straight before. You know, he's primed to get to that, to get to at least to his absolute peak, which he wasn't that far off here, and go even better, I would have thought. So, you know, he's only second up here. He's got lots of improvement to come, I'd sort of think.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's going to go that 1,200 Group 3 on Derby Day that Spacewalk, I think, won last year.
Yeah, beating that Griffiths horse? The other Griffiths horse, Najim Sahail.
Najim Sahail, yeah. So he might even back up during Cup Week, Ray McNeary. There's races for him on the Thursday and Saturday at the end of Cup Week as well. So
that's what Najim Sahail did last year. Yeah. Najim Sahail did the backup, and he ran second to Spacewalk on the, I think it was the Tuesday, and he backed up on the Saturday and won. So I think, you know, same stable, that's maybe what they're going to try and do with him here.
Yeah, I agree that Jai got this wrong, but I just want to add some context to the ride. Spacewalk is a horse who is noted for laying in. He laid on top of Ray McNeary as they turned for home. And I reckon that got into Jai's mind. That's why he's wanted to come to the outside of the horse rather than staying on his line, thinking, oh, if Spacewalk just lays in on top of me here, this is going to be terrible. And, yeah, I reckon that's why he's come to the outside. He's costed a bit of momentum. And, obviously, we're talking a very small margin at the finish. No doubt it's cost the horse the race. But just to give – I think that was what was going through his mind as to why he didn't want to hold that line when he came around the home turn, because Spacewalk had already laid on top of him, and a horse who's noted for laying in on top of other horses. So – just to give a little bit of context, but yeah, definitely cost him the race. The Tristark Lady in Pink ends up winning here. Starts $20 Betfair. Did have a little bit of support. Ben Allen sits right forward. Geez, I think he's one of the most underrated riders in Victoria, Ben Allen. This season, he's going quite well in Metro Melbourne. You think of some of the horses he's been able to get the best out of on these Metro Saturdays, Barrakeel, Pinstriped, riding plenty of winners in the country area. And again, got it right there on Lady in Pink. She runs to a career best performance, but it's hard for anything to make ground from the back here, Will. So first four out, finishing the first five. What do you make of the race going forward?
Well, they went so slow. So, like, you know, with the track, you know, it was hard to make ground on the day, and they walked here. So I knew my fate early with Skybird, who was well supported, and it was given. I mean, it wasn't his fault at all. Like, he drew inside and the horse was slow away. So, you know, I knew my fate, but it is what it is. And, you know, great ride on Revolutionary Miss, I thought, to cross and sit outside Lee. They did that in this race last year, actually. And, you know, she's such a good horse because she's so versatile. She can just put herself on speed. Good horse. Anyway, yeah, they'll all go to the Empire Rose, I would have thought. And if the good fillies come down from Sydney, like, I don't know who's favourite. A Tissue's probably favourite for that race. Like, she'll be beating these, I would have thought. So I thought Molly Knickers, you know, I backed her first up, and I thought there was something, you know, there was something doing there, and she was very good here again. So maybe she's the one that can just take that next step. But I'm just leading towards the Empire Rose, I'd be against this form.
Yeah, I agree. I'd be against it heading towards the Empire Rose. You're going to have Amelia's Jewel come down from the King Charles, of course, Tissue. They've got to be better than this group. But Lady in Pink, credit to Leon, Troy Corson's Will Larkin. They've got her to run easily a career peak. She's in good form. Maybe a Matriarch. I think they'll go there via an Empire Rose. She wouldn't be disgraced in a race like that. And that's the other key with this horse. She had one at 2,000 metres. So what she's doing now is probably only a bonus for them. So it was a good win. The last race, didn't want to necessarily review as a whole, but I'll just get some thoughts from you on particular horses. Mighty Ulysses sort of produced a number out of nowhere, but a horse who had good international form.
Yeah, had good international form, and, you know, they brought him over for the, you know, he turned up first up in the George Ryder. Like, he, good horse. Obviously, they had a good enough opinion of him to run him first up there, and then he went to Eagle Farm at big odds and run a massive rating, and he's sort of run to that level of maybe a length off it here. And he probably runs to that level if he, you know, if he wasn't checked about 15 different times in the straight. So, yeah, just Buffalo River, like, he's such a likable horse. You know, I've labeled Buffalo River gone about like 50 different times. You know, after he won 2021 in, I think it was this exact race, the Moonga, on the soft track here, like, you know, that's Buffalo River done and dusted. Like, that's him, and he just keeps turning up. He did the same thing last year, you know, on this day in this race. He's just Caulfield Cup Day. He just seems to grow a leg on Caulfield Cup Day. So he's a likable horse, and you know, these horses probably go to the Rupert Clark on Thousand Guineas Day, and I'll be looking for different form. I'd say there's a horse called I'm forgetting the Kiramar horse that absolutely bolstered him. Jimmy Star.
Yeah, Jimmy Star.
He's you know, if this is what he's got to beat there, you know, how far is he going to win by?
Especially when he gets into a handicap. I think Pinstripe was all right.
Yeah, not bad. He had to make
a lot of ground from out wide. You probably would have thought, given the conditions of the day, like, you think maybe a horse like Pinstripe, he could have stayed to the fence. But in defense of Ben Allen, like, the horse doesn't go that well between horses. He's a very quirky horse. Best runs are when you get him to the outside. So I think that's what he was thinking. And got to remember, too, not grand final day. Offers a setback. He'll be right for a race like the Rupert Clark or a Champions Mile. Could get back to somewhere near his best. Major horse to follow out of the day for Caulfield for you?
Good question. It's kind of hard. I'd probably say Lovely Cut, you know, for 1,000 guineas. Just, you know, you might get that little bit extra of a price in the 1,000 guineas, just because she's trained by Reese Goodwin. And that's not saying that Reece Goodwin's not a good trainer at all. That's just saying that, you know, he's not a Kieran Maher or a Chris Waller. You know, he's not a headline trainer, but he's obviously got a very good horse, and he's obviously training her very well. So, I think she's the one for the 1,000 guineas, at least on, you know, exposed form.
Don't mind that at all. Of course, you can sign up to the 6-day racing where Bot has a little bit of impact on Ben Colucci's decisions. Not really?
Not enough at that. No, that's all
not
Ben.
Even Will Campbell.
I'm not on Ben. The payroll.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's Ben's stuff, but shout out to Ben. Shout out to 6-day. And your stuff.
Yeah, I thought we'd better shout out the 6-day, considering he's been going pretty well throughout the spring.
Yeah, he has. And what about you? What the racing show? You got to give yours a plug.
Don't bother about that.
You've got to give yours a plug.
The racing show. You can find all our stuff at the racing show on Twitter. Nico's yard. he's fired up for a big day at Geelong Cup on Wednesday, and then Mooney Valley back to back day. So looks a hot race, the Geelong Cup.
It does. That's good, man.
Anyway. He does look a bit of a horse bird, man. Mm. So. Bo Merton's taking the ride for Chris Waller. Have a big impact on the Melbourne Cup, I'd say, the Geelong Cup, especially if one of those internationals is able to win it. Looking at Randwick on Saturday, there's obviously massive races to dissect from there, the Everest and the King Charles. Our man, your man, Benny Colucci, was out there at Randwick, and he said the day was absolutely outstanding again. Everyone I talk to reckons Everest Day is just a day you've got to get to. He wanted to give it a little bit of a pump up, given just that it's got the young crowd there, and that the whole day was awesome yet again. So fair play to PVL. They've certainly nailed this day for Sydney. Can't wait till next year when the King Charles is actually 2 weeks before the Cox Plate, and we don't have horses that are running in the King Charles that should be running in the Cox Plate missing. That's a separate discussion, though. Let's review Everest Day in its totality from the performances. What did you make of the track first and foremost?
Oh, well, I don't really follow it too much, but you know, from what I saw, I thought it was a bit on pace there. I'm not exactly sure, but I've heard there was a bit of wind around, and that impacted the shoot races. So I'm not much of a Sydney man. What do you think? Have you looked over?
Well, I think it's pretty easy just to, you know, sometimes just to keep it simple. You look at the remaining six races, of the day on Everest Day and the settling positions. You had Far Too Easy settled third in run, Overpass led, Bellini Patina sat outside the leader, Ostraka led, Pride of Jenny obviously led, and Maya Bron sat third, and Che Wolf got, you know, down the middle of the track. But then Will Ado, who won the last as well, or Willado, was able to sit outside the leader. So I think you're right. No disadvantage to be up on top of the pace. If anything, probably a bit of an advantage. But that probably is Randwick rail true anyway, especially on a day where it's firm enough track, like good four track. It's probably going to advantage those anyway. Going to have a look back at the two massive features of the day. We'll start with the Everest. Bellini Patina gets a big moment in the sun, finally wins a major. She's been, you know, probably one of the most consistent horses at the top level we've had in recent seasons. And Craig Williams, albeit he was wide, sits up on top of the pace, uses her versatility, and she's able to withhold a big late challenge from Giga Kick, who got back into some sort of form there on Saturday. And Growing Empire, the three-year-old, hangs on for third in front of Lady of Camelot. What do we make of the sprinters as a group now with their division? This was grand final day for many of them. How'd they rate?
Well, yeah, it's a weak, you know, we've been saying it for ages. It's not the strongest our set of sprinters have ever been. Yeah, I mean, it's not a crash hot race, but you know, they're not going to race anything different to this, so it doesn't really matter. Like historically, though, it's not breathtaking. I thought it was a great ride, Craig Williams. Like you know, he got out there, sat three wide, and up on speed. You know, helped that she jumped so well, and he won a $20 million race, and the rest of them won cover. So you know. That's all they really wanted. Like, you know,
this, like, they didn't go very quick here, but, you know, theoretically the Everest is the it's the fastest horses in the world. Well, they might not exactly be that, but, you know, generally speaking, these are the best sprinters in the world, and sitting wide on you know, in an Everest, like, you're not meant to do that. But he did that, and it was perfect because, you know, if he went back like the rest of them, he probably would have been running on, and he wouldn't have won. So great ride, I thought, just to do that. And it just shows, like, he assessed the situation. So he jumped and he was forward, and then once he sort of found that he could pull back and find that sort of 1-1, he did that, and the horse was too good. It's not like she's run a massive new number or anything. She's run to her level. She's such a consistent horse. It's the best thing about her. Like, I think she's an all-time great race mare, and it's not because she's not a black caviar. She's not one of the best horses, but she's been so good. Like, she began her career in October as a 2-year-old, pre-Christmas. Mm. Like, when you think about that, she won a Quizette, and she's just kept improving, and she's 7 now. She's won an Everest. She's a great, great horse. And you know, if you don't love Ballina Patina, you don't love horse racing. She's the best. I thought it was great that Craig beat Giga Kick in a photo as well. It just had to happen.
Yeah, that it's certainly a fair bit of irony there, considering he got taken off Giga Kick after last preparation. Ballina Patina, from a numbers perspective, I think one of the great things with her is just her consistency and reliability. You look at her last 10 starts, and she's got 7 ratings above 101 at weight for age. Her top rating came yesterday, or on Saturday, in the Everest with 103.2 for that period, and yet she's just remarkably honest. So whilst there's nothing that's blowing the barn doors off the sprinting ranks, she's going to be hard to beat in everything, and Craig Williams executed the grand final ride to perfection. I thought Willow's rides on Saturday, he was right at the peak of his powers. Good signs for those that are on Mr. Brightside and a Cox Plate. I would have thought he's in the zone. Giga Kick, I think there's a real learning with Giga Kick. Don't get too worried about first and second up runs of horses from long spells. I think they need the hit outs. You know, they've lacked that race craft for a little while. You could get a bit bogged down by his two first up runs, saying they were very disappointing. They're also in very slowly run races, which, when you look back at this horse's profile, that's not him. He's a high pressure horse. He returned to something near his best there on Saturday. Still a little bit off what he was able to do in sort of races like an Everest going back to 22. And a race like the TJ Smith in 23, but he's certainly building towards something. I think he's coming down for the champion sprint, for the champion sprint. They're not going to stay in Sydney. Growing Empire, I think still the Coolmore will be the target for him. They haven't said he's gone to the paddock yet. Lady of Camelot, I reckon, will come down with him. Sunshine in Paris, decision whether she goes to the Russell Balding against Ballina Patina, which is that big $3 million race on Golden Eagle Day that Bella won last year, or if she comes to the champion sprint. Private Eye will go to the Russell Balding. Jolly Star to the Golden Eagle. Storm Boy, I think, will come down for the Coolmore. Steffi off to the Golden Eagle. And the other two, I think, go to the paddock. I Wish I Win did pull up lame after his performance there on Saturday. Maybe a little bit harsh to say the writing was on the wall, but I didn't think he finished off as well as what he could have done in the Manicato. And it's probably, disappointing for everyone who loves I Wish I Win, but perhaps the injuries and the management that they've had to have behind the scenes with him is catching up with him in his old age. Hopefully they can get him back next preparation to his best. I'll touch on a couple of the beaten performances with you, just your thoughts on them. Giga Kick, what did you make of his overall performance? I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, really good. I thought, like you said, I was worried about him off the first two runs, but that was obviously just running the rust off, really, and you know, great training performance to have him there on the day after, you know, seemingly a horse that was a long way off his best. So to have him, you know, a nose away from winning the Everest off those two runs and the injury that he did have, it was great to see. Good horse, and he'd be very, very competitive. Obviously, probably should be favourite in the champion sprint.
Yep. Of the others, is there anything you want to back Jolly Star going up to 1500 in a Golden Eagle, or is it just dependent on what shows up?
Well, I really wish I went to the Champion Sprint, because I think she's a horse that needs just that, you know. I think J-Mac probably could have been a little bit more urgent with her just to get her out of the gates, but you know, she doesn't have that gate speed. She needs to flow early, and you know, it's an Everest, horses flying across from everywhere, you know, they want to find their positions early. Just at Flemington, you know, down the straight, you get to find your position a little bit more, and she's got that massive turn of foot. You know, the last 400 metres was massive from her. I think she'd, you know, you could make her really, really short in the Champion Sprint, I would have thought. It's disappointing that she's going to the Golden Eagle. So I would have really, really loved to have backed her in the Champion Sprint. But anyway.
What's the reason she failed there on Saturday? Because she's come home quicker than anything the last 400. Was it just the early pace that she couldn't get in the race?
I think it was a muddling pace. Like, they didn't go overly quick. Like, they sort of went an even pace. It wasn't quick, wasn't slow, but she just sort of wasn't able to find a spot early. And you know, it wasn't necessarily J-Mac's fault. He could have maybe been a little bit more urgent, like just that little bit early. I think she got checked a little bit. You know, you watch the vision about the 800, I think she was sort of lost position too. And that was quite crucial in, you know, she got checked. She lost maybe a length and had to come up the inside. But, the market really loved her. And I think that rating that she did first up, I think was, what was it, what the race called? Anyway, it doesn't matter. Went really well. And I think, you know, I'd like to see her in a Champion Sprint, but obviously she'd probably got to be favourite. Oh no, she won't because the Japanese horse is there. But you know, she'd be second or third favourite for the Golden Eagle.
Yeah, I think I don't even know the names of these horses. I'm going to bring this up, but the Japanese and the French horse that are coming for the Golden Eagle. Scully Pacino
and Lazat or something. I know absolutely nothing about them, but apparently they're very good.
Oh, I've done a little bit of digging in the last week, and they both have some big numbers on Racing Post. So, yeah, I'd say they're both going to be, if they turn up in the form that they've bought from overseas, they're going to be hard to beat. So, Scully Pacino is $3.50, Jolly Star $6, $6 Lazat, Tom Kitten's $11. We'll touch on him in a second, Will, via the King Charles, but still baffling to me that he's going to a Golden Eagle. And then you got $13 Celestial Legend and Southport Tycoon. That's the Everest. Let's get to the King Charles. This was run at a strong speed, but Pride of Jenny can certainly go quicker than this through the first 800 metres. She's been beaten by Chaya Wolf, who's put down a big performance, 103.4 at Weight for Age on Form King, the best performance in his career, and he seemed to love the strong speed.
Yeah, he did. It was good to... It's great to see a four-year-old coming through, because you know we sort of need one. We don't have we need a fresh new horse on the scene. Like, you know, Pride of Jenny's been that, but he's a 4-year-old gelding and he's probably going to be around for 2 to 3 years. So it's great to see him, you know, keep improving. He won the Epsom last week and he's turned up and to beat, you know, Pride of Jenny, who's probably you got to label as probably our best horse. So yeah, great. Pride of Jenny, I don't know. Yeah. I thought just with Major Bill, and I don't think that they necessarily, you know, the narrative and all that, I don't think they necessarily did anything wrong with Major Bill at all, and the tactics they used. But I thought that just getting before, just crossing before they turned, and she got there eventually quite comfortably. But in doing so, I think Declan sort of pushed her that little bit just to get across before they turned. And, you know, that just using that quick acceleration, maybe just, you know, the way that Declan rides her is so good because it's all about momentum and it's a slow, gradual build up. And he wasn't really able to do that just because he had to get across. So maybe that influenced the result. I don't know. She's backing up. I'd say, you know, she's run 102 here, so it's not a absolute best, but I'd back her to run 104 to 105 on Saturday. It's very, very exciting for the Cox Plate. So you might even get more of a price now because she's been beaten. So Yeah, very exciting stuff. I thought Fangirl was bad. I don't know. I think it's unfair to say that she just didn't get it because it was a fast pace. I just sort of think that she's, you know, she did have that injury. Apparently she almost died. Like, you know, it's hard to come back from those sorts of things. So maybe she just needs another reset. She can come back as a better horse next prep, or maybe she's just, you know, maybe that's just her now. And that's okay. Like, she's done her job. She's been a really good mare for an extended period of time.
Yeah, she has been. Be interesting to see if they do press on and go to the Champions Mile, or if it's job done, off a bad run, and they go back to go to the paddock. Probably the Walla Way is to go to the paddock and reset for the autumn, given the amount of races available for her. My Oberon, I thought, was terrific. He's run right up to the best of his ability. I thought Nash's ride, he summed up the race perfect, sort of dragging up the rest of the field. And I thought he was going to go past Pride of Jenny at the 200, but she kicked in for the fight, and he just couldn't wear her down for third. Yeah.
I love that. She's such a likable horse. Like, she was gone. I thought she was going to run last, and she just kept kicking. She'd run second. I don't know how she does it.
Yeah, it was a really good run by Pride of Jenny. I brought it up on the review pod for the racing show, which you can catch on Patreon, little plug. But Pride of Jenny, when you look at her historically, so how far she can go in these races, Will, and when she's possibly been at her very best, is when she goes that 16, 17 sort of lengths above the all benchmark. You look at the Champions Mile, 13.8 above, the All-Star Mile, 16.8 above, the Australian Cup, 17.9, the Queen Elizabeth, 21.1. In reference to Saturday, she's only gone 10.1 above. And I just think the way she's now being trained and she's been out to the 2000, expect fireworks in the Cox Plate. I think all this talk from Tony that they're going to use a plan B and she doesn't have to lead is just psyching out the opposition. They're going to go plus 17, plus 18 in the Cox Plate, leave nothing on the table, and it's come get her. I honestly think if she went faster there in the King Charles in Saturday, she takes more out of Che Wolf because he's not racing in a position where he's comfortable. He's not racing, you know, 8-9 lengths behind her at the 800. He's probably 14-15, and that makes his job harder to come get her. I personally think they've used a $5 million race in the King Charles as a prelim, for the Cox Plate when they were going to go all guns blazing. And look, I think if the King Charles was 2 weeks before, they probably blazed her up there on Saturday and she would have gone super hard. But I can understand from a training perspective, like and Declan's perspective, I don't want to light her up through this midsection when I've got to back her up next week. It just, and she nearly won the race still doing the tactics they did. So no knock. Of course, they're still definitely trying to win. But I think you're going to see fireworks in the Cox Plate. Tom Kitten for me is the great example of why some of these big money races, everyone wants to be involved, your Dolphins, Gay Waterhouse, all the big stables, and he's just the wrong horse for these races. So he's a 2,000-meter horse who's, you know, trying to run at a mile because of the big money on offer to them in the King Charles and the Golden Eagle. Again, there on Saturday, Chia Wolf out sprints him over the last 600, but he's coming again on the line. You look at his late sectionals relative to Chia Wolf in as a whole. His last 1,000, he's run 11.5 above, Chia Wolf 12.1 above. Whilst Chia Wolf is much quicker than him, sort of 4-2, 2 to the post, he can sustain a long run. And I just think they've got him completely wrong. He should be backing up in a Cox Plate, heading towards a Champion Stakes. Maybe even, like, could have been a horse that should have been in a Caulfield Cup.
Yeah, I was about to say,
I reckon he's probably the horse who's now going to be a bit maligned because it's like, oh, he can't go with these top-level horses, but he's racing at the wrong distance. Amelia's Jewel, I reckon, was good, building towards something. Her last 1,000 was 10.1 above. She's out-sprinted by a few horses there on Saturday, but I think she's not the way to ride her. You've got to ride her a bit more for pace in the early stages. I would have loved to have seen her with the My Oberon-type run. And Tommy probably could have had that run on the back of Nash at the start, but he decided to go back from the wide draw. I don't reckon you'll see that again from her. Empire Rose Day, they'll put her in the first four. And I reckon she's trending towards something where she might get back closer to her best number. Amelia's Jewel. You might not.
Up.
Yeah, fourth up. That's the Annabelle Rob Archibald way, is to just keep building throughout the preparation. I'm not giving up on us seeing the best of AJ again. I think there was enough. There were signs of life there on Saturday, given the way the race was run. Anything else you want to touch on at the King Charles?
No, not really. Nothing really for the day. Like, the Silver Eagle was, like, the market was bang on with a striker, but and great ride Blake Shin, but, you know, there's other four-year-olds that'll be lapping those. And Overpass, really, really good in the Sydney Stakes. You know, like, doesn't work like this, but you take the number that he ran there and put it in the Everest, he probably runs third. Yep. So what was he not doing in the Everest? I'm not sure. He's, you know, he's a very, very good horse. He's going to turn up in the Champion Sprint and then obviously go to Perth, and he probably just wins in Perth again, you'd say. So, I mean, yeah, like what's a horse like, you know, like, he's a good horse, 100%, but Stormboy should have been in the Caulfield Guineas, Overpass should have been in the Everest, but you know, breeding is what they want, and you know, we want horse racing, not breeding. I guess, you know, they're racing for breeding. We want breeding to race, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it's still the one little knock on the Everest is you are going to get years where you get a Stormboy racing out of his probably position. You know,
he ran really well.
Yeah, he ran well. I would say on the Everest, I don't know why they rode him so slow in front. Like, a horse who could get out to 1,400, 1,600, surely they'd try and burn him up.
They pushed him early. I just don't think he can go that quick early because it's 1,200.
Yeah, that's probably true, quicker. Yeah. I think that the new name for Stormboy should be Pretty Boy. He's got this tag that is a $20 million colt. He hasn't actually done anything to warrant it yet.
Yeah,
I don't know about... That's still my little knock on the Everest is you are going to, every year, is you are going to have, you know, with your Coolmores and Godolphins and your Longs with their slot, they're going to pick one of their own colts, which will leave a horse like Overpass on the sidelines, who no doubt deserves a position.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's another sort of thing, and that's what you get with the big money races. Everyone wants to be involved, the big stables, they want a runner, so... That's it.
Yeah. All right. Shall we do questions very quickly so we don't go for an hour and a half?
Well, right, in fairness, if you're going to go for an hour and a half, Will, it's got to be the Caulfield Cup Everest Day Pod.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's one of the best weekends of racing all year.
All right. Let's get to the questions. I'll chuck these up. So there's plenty of questions and a few of these. I don't know how we're going to handle here, Will, but... We'll get to the first one that was DM'd from Will Johnston for the pod. Lengthy, sorry. Feel free to cut any, of course. All right. Well, so I'll get through a couple of these, and if there's too many, I'll cut them. Is there anything to take from the Caulfield Cup into a Melbourne Cup outside Buckaroo if he goes there? And I guess, would you take him there? Any likely Melbourne Cup speed influences to help a real stayer like Warp Speed, for example? I think you've said there's only the only horse you want to take from the Caulfield Cup into a Melbourne Cup is Buckaroo, and he's going there. So that
and Land Legend to an extent.
Land Legend price dependent, I think.
Yeah.
And any likely Melbourne Cup speed influences to help a real stayer? Well, Warp Speed, they've got to make their own speed, surely. Yeah, he's just got to be put up on top of the pace in a Melbourne Cup. But,
well, I mean, Saturday was a barrier trial, and, you know, in an ideal world, sure, but he was beaten 16 lengths on Saturday. And, I wouldn't want to be backing him in a Melbourne Cup, but, you know, we'll see what price he is.
No, I think Nick got that horse spot on. He said he's way too slow for Australian races, and I reckon he's spot on. You'd want big odds for him in a Melbourne Cup. Will just wanted to mention as well how good racing is at producing stories. Harry Coffey, Bella, Craig, etc., just from the weekend, something we really need to keep promoting, in his opinion.
Yeah,
we didn't touch on it heaps about Harry's backstory, but every media company will be getting behind this. But, of course, he had the battle with cystic fibrosis as a kid. He had a low life expectancy. I think he was, you know, when he was born, they said he wasn't going to live to past his 21st birthday. Medications improved since that period, and he's been able to not only become a successful jockey, but probably more important, have a great quality of life. He's now a young father. He's one of the best blokes you'd ever meet in racing, Harry Coffey. So
seems
shout
like,
out to him.
Great jockey too. Yeah. Like he doesn't get like the rides that he should. Like he's a bloody good jockey.
Yeah, I agree with that. Should be getting more opportunities. Hopefully the Caulfield Cup win does that for him. And Craig Williams, everyone goes on about him as well as a good bloke, but it's nice to see like guys who put a bit of time and effort into stuff away from racing. Obviously all the stuff he's done for those people in the Ukraine with the packages to help those in need, and for him to get rewarded with a big race day on Saturday, you're certainly left smiling with that. Champions Day at Ascot. Gee, I don't know about this. This might be one you can answer here, Will. I don't even know who this horse is. Calendar. Given Callan Dargan is a gelding, can we pass him for it? How do you say that horse's name?
Calendergan.
Calendergan? Is a gelding, can we entice him to a Cox Plate next year?
Well, yes, because he's very, very, very good. I don't know if he'd come. They'd probably much rather go to America, I guess. I don't know, but yeah.
Who's he trained by?
I think it's Graffard. He's a French horse. So, okay. But, you know, very, very good horse. He ran second to City of Troy. He ran the, in the Judmon, he ran the last 600 about half a second quicker than what City of Troy did. So he's a very good horse, and he won the, I think it's, was it the Hardwick? Or, no, not the Hardwick. I don't know, mile and a half race at Royal Ascot by about half the straight. So a really nice horse, but, I don't know if they're bringing him over. He's probably too good. but yeah.
Fair enough. Car Ying rising to an Everest question mark. Well, with his link with the Hay Stable, you never know. I suppose they'd love to probably win the race. He's got a bit of a job to do, though, in Hong Kong, doesn't he? He needs to win that Hong Kong sprint and sort of really define himself as the best sprinter there. But he was pretty exciting across the weekend. Another one here is we're finally starting to see an emergence of the next gen of medal distance horses such as Chia Wolf, but with 1.8 lengths separating in the Everest from first to eighth and lowest rating one ever per Dan O'Sullivan, what do you make of the potentially weak sprinting ranks?
I don't know. What is there to make of it? They're just not as good as what they normally are, I guess. But
I think you hit the nail on the head before. From a historical point of view, you can't get over carried away with them. Like you can't probably label a horse like Ballinipatina, say, a champion, because there is horses that have gone before her that haven't had that tag who have performed to a high level, winning those races. But it doesn't mean anything for us as punters because they all race each other. Unless something else comes on the scene that's an absolute monster, well, you just got to assess the horses you've got. All right, now into a few more questions. This one's from punters and collectors. Thoughts on Oscar's Fortune this weekend, who goes around in the McEwen, the Perth horse?
That race at Caulfield went no good, and I wouldn't want to back anything out of it, but, you know, he's a good horse.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting race, that race, the McEwen. You got Barrakil going there, who's going to wait for age for the first time, so it'd be interesting to see how he measures up. I agree that Scalacci didn't go that well, so just be interesting. Alistair McCook, shout out to Al, his owner in Cadre du Noir. Top five jockeys of the spring thus far, aka up the power rankings.
Ooh. I don't know.
Willow would have to be up there after Saturday.
He'd have to be, yeah. Josh Parr went really well. He had two wins from three rides, I saw. I don't know.
James, from the spring, like I know he'd be like the number one leading into the spring, but he hasn't had like the best spring.
Yeah, Mark Zara's got to be there. He's had a good spring so far.
Yeah, he's had a good spring. I'd probably say just this is all off the fly. The way I'd probably do it is one, Blake Shin, Antino. Two, I'd go with D Lane. He's rode Via Sestina and Private Life. Three, Craig Williams. Four, Mark Zara. And five, I reckon, very underrated. I know he's gone on the back of Chia Wolf, but deserves bigger opportunities. Chad Schofield for mine. Bit underrated in that Sydney room. You got a top five?
No.
We just want to move on.
Oh, you got a bang on, I reckon. All right. Whatever you say.
This one's from Braden. What is your top four in order for the Golden Eagle? Thanks. Jeez, you've set us a task 2 weeks before the race, and we don't even do Sydney form.
Japanese horse, French horse, Jolly Star, and Stefan Megadeka.
Yeah, it sounds pretty good to me. Casual call out here on Twitter. Thoughts on McNeil's rides throughout the day?
Oh, we sort of touched on that earlier. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
He got, you know, he was unlucky on Isthmus. I thought that ride was fine. He just got sort of bumped at the wrong time. The horse wasn't good enough. You know, as you said, he got laid in on top of Spacewalk. Maybe it wasn't his greatest ride ever, but, you know, they make mistakes, we all do, and I don't even remember what else he rode on the day, so.
Yeah, the other sort of horse he had that was inside the market was a meaner. They drew the widest gate, stable instructions to go back. It was always going to happen,
yeah.
Yeah, and she might have come to the end of the prep anyway after a few runs in New South Wales, so.
Yeah.
Not his best day at the office, but I wouldn't say there was anything that was super bad. Jesse Way, will Buckaroo run 3,200?
I don't know.
That's a question we'd like to know, Will. We won't find out till Melbourne Cup.
Yeah. But, you know, the every indication he will. I wouldn't say that he wouldn't based on Saturday's effort.
Yeah. This one coming through from Ryan. What did we learn from a Derby perspective on Derby? Start again. What did we learn from a Derby aspect on the weekend? A bit of a sit and sprint race in the end. Only a bit, you reckon? Gee, they absolutely walked. Yeah. You would think it would be more unlikely than likely than broadsiding and Henline back up out of their runs this weekend. We did sort of touch on this after the Caulfield Classic. I think if you can find something that wins well at Geelong or Moonee Valley, they're going to become favourite for the Derby because it's very wide open.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's that politely done used by politeness that won really well at a maiden. And there's also the Lavalliere.
Lavalliere going at Geelong. You've got another nice horse to Julius. Yeah, Red Aces, who's going to go to the Vase. Really nice horse of Julius Sandu that runs at Geelong on Wednesday. Yeah, Oxford Blue. So there's a few horses that could emerge late in the picture. I don't know if we learnt too much out of Saturday.
Nothing.
Not really anything. King of Wall Street already put the writing on the wall the start prior that he's gonna like 2,500. So he did nothing to probably hurt his chances in a Derby anyway. Punters and collectors, if given a slot, would have overpassed won the Everest?
No.
But I'd say no. He would have been competitive. I don't think he would have won it. You're probably on board with that, I reckon.
Yeah. I think he'd be competitive, but I don't think he would won it.
Mitch is saying here, taking into consideration the mid-race slowdown, wind speeds and track conditions, are there any out of the Caulfield Cup we should forgive?
I don't know. I mean, in the context, they're all going to the Melbourne Cup, I guess, and that's the context. And I wouldn't want to forgive him because I wouldn't want to back him, I guess.
Yeah, so. Well, that's it. It's all like there could be a few horses that would potentially forgive runs. Like Denied Knowledge had a pretty tough run up on top of the speed when the pressure went on in the mid race, and she already done all this amount of work. Maybe if she goes back to 2,000, you could be interested. I thought Warmonger was perhaps a forgive given how far back he got, but he's going to the paddock, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
it
doesn't matter. Yeah.
No, I don't think there's too many others in out of the Caulfield Cup. Tom Punts, back pallet trick star at $26 for the Coolmore. That's a trumpet. How does she rate compared to the Sydney Colts? Don't hear her much talked about given her chances for a horse who has won three on the bounce.
Yeah, she's got to come up a little bit. Yeah, she does have to come up a little bit, but she did beat the older horses. Like, she beat the horse that won the Moya. So, you know, you just take straight lines. It doesn't work like that, but you take straight lines. It's a good form line. So I think she's a bit off the best, and she still needs to improve, but she was good on a day that, you know, she wasn't in the exact right spot, but she was good, and she can still improve, I guess. But I wouldn't make her favourite or anywhere near it, but she's got a good chance, I would have thought.
Yeah, I think she'd be one of the chances. Probably starts around that $11 mark in a Coolmore with the likes of Traffic Warden, Switzerland coming down, Growing Empire. You know, Storm Boy, I guess, is going to be there. Lady of Camelot. It's pretty hot Coolmore. So she's going the right way. Like, you can't knock any horses, won three in a row, and she does have a win at Flemington. So probably a good horse to take at 26 about, but I still think she's up against it winning. And Walter, I just wanted to say, I want to know who these mugs are that keep backing Stretton Angel. It's an off-season horse and always was. Then also commented with the gif, stop, he's already dead from The Simpsons. I reckon that's directed straightly at you, Will, after you said Stretton Angel.
I love Stretton Angel. I love it.
I thought she ran all right on Saturday.
I don't even know, to be honest. The market didn't like her. I don't know. She She ran second in the what's it called? The
Goodwood?
Yeah, was it the Goodwood or the Mares or the, I don't know. Anyway, she's a good filly.
The Goodwood, yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah, well, she ran well in the Gilguy. I think you have to forgive some of those horses that aren't trained. It's a little bit different, say, with these mega stables that transfer horses from Sydney to Melbourne. They've got multiple bases. They can sort of gallop them the wrong, you know, the other direction properly and things like that. Philip Stokes doesn't have a Sydney base. Sending Stretton Angel up to Sydney, first time going that direction. I'd be a bit forgiving of her performance. Maybe back down the straight cup week, there might be a race for her. All right. I reckon we have clocked that, Will. I'm looking through. There's no other questions that have come through that I've seen. I think we've got everything. So it's all the build up now to Cox Plate Week. What's on for you this week?
Working. I've got uni stuff to do and obviously form, lots of form. Geelong Cup this week and then Cox Plate Day. So I'm looking forward. Oh, obviously Moonee Valley Cup Day as well. So looking forward to that. What about you?
Yeah, I'm the same. Work as of Wednesday, going to the Caulfield Heath jump outs, and then it all sort of really begins on that Thursday because you'd be doing a lot of form for the two meetings Friday and Saturday at Moonee Valley and Sale Cup Sunday too, which is a beauty. So the Country Cups, I reckon, have
great at the moment.
Hit the mark at the moment in Country Racing Victoria. Didn't win it yesterday, but Lotta Rock, terrific in the Horsham Cup against Station One and Dublin Journal. Great finish.
Yeah.
And Midnight Blue winning the Seymour Cup. So if you can get out to them, some of the best days you'll go to, those country racing cups. Yeah, they are. If you do the work, you can certainly get some good prices about a few of those meetings, especially on the Saturday, those provincial meetings that some people give the wide berth to. All right, racing previews, the racing show collab done and dusted for Caulfield Cup Everest review. I hope you guys liked it. Sign you out with some good beats, whatever Benny comes up with. And it's the build up now to Cox Plate Week. See you later, Will.
Thanks, Trav. Wasn't the spring, and spring became. All horses are